You're listening to Free City Radio. This is the 183rd edition of the program. I'm Stefan Christoph in Montreal, Geogiage. Thank you for tuning in. On the episode this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation I had with journalist and writer who's based in Ramallah, Palestine. A writer and someone who I got to know in the context of social movements and protests in Canada, named Jesse Rosenfeld. Jesse recently published an article about the situation in the occupied territories of Palestine and the recent protest movement in Israel against judicial reform. There's a really important point to this article that I think is important to listen to this week, given the massive Israeli military attack on the besieged Palestinian territory of Gaza, which is to think about the ways that the protest movement in Israel against the Netanyahu government's push for judicial reform of the Supreme Court has really not touched on a fundamental point, which is the reality of the Israeli state's occupation of Palestine. I think this is really important to consider. A lot of major media reporting, international press reporting, have spoken about the protest movement in Israel as a battle of a progressive street-based protest movement against a right-wing government. Although there is a small group of Israeli activists who are, you know, expressing very importantly solidarity with the Palestinian people, the vast majority of this protest movement have not addressed this issue. And I think it's important to sort of name that and to think about that right now and what it shows in terms of the massive gap of understanding within the press globally around what's happening today in Israel and in Palestine. The fact that the protest movement has largely been silent on the ongoing Israeli occupation is important to name and to talk about. And I think also this interview is interesting in terms of trying to understand a bit more deeply some of the dynamics around this protest movement in Israel and as it relates to the sustained occupation of Palestine and the political layers to this situation. So thank you again to Jesse for joining us on the program this week from Ramallah. Jesse has for years uncovered and addressed the injustices and human rights abuses that are inherent to the Israeli occupation in Palestine and also has reported from Gaza on a number of occasions. So I'm happy to share this conversation with Jesse this week on Free City Radio. Here it is. These connections between different issues, I know you from protests in the early 2000s in Montreal when you were studying there. And that's when we first met. So just as a disclosure of context, I remember you were particularly interested in joining migrant justice protests after September 11th and also Palestine solidarity protests. So it's been a long time that we've known each other. I read your recent article and I appreciated one of your recent pieces. This was one in Rolling Stone. And I appreciated how you built a connection or at least an opening to think about the ways that the protests against the judicial reform, as it's called, inside of the Israeli political context, can be thought of in some ways as linked to the broader reality of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. And you interview people in the West Bank in that piece. And you also talk about Gaza, of course. You mentioned all the context of the background of writing about different issues. And I found that in this piece, I think that benefits the ideas that you share because you see these connection points. And often, last point on this, when we see the reporting about the recent wave of protests in Israel, it's very disconnected from the reality in Palestine. Your piece addressed that. So Yeah, if you could share a bit about what motivated you to write that piece and some of the main points that you try to bring up in terms of thinking about that connection between those two sort of political crisis points.
Right, well, I guess the jumping off point for what I was writing about is the fact that the mass protests that have been happening in Israeli cities since January, and the return of Netanyahu's new government, again the most right wing in Israeli history, like every other one has been, every previous one has been. They just happen to outdo each other in how hard line they are. The idea was to, and these protests themselves are, the most consequential domestic political crisis that Israelis have faced. And what they're, and ostensibly what they've been placed over is the idea of reforming the Israeli judiciary and the hampering of the Israeli courts or subordinating of them to the elected branches of government. And in a country without a constitution, this has created a crisis. But mostly what this is, what the protests are, is, or the issue of the judicial reform is a symptom of a larger split that's been going on in Israeli society for quite some time. As Israelis have become, have moved further to the right and become more religious and more nationalist over the last 20 years, this kind of social split that's happened in the country has really taken hold. Netanyahu is the representative of that kind of political shift in the country, and as he remade the country in his image. But at the same time, the protests are very much a reflection of the divisions in Israeli society that has gotten to a point of incredible security and economic success. And what's happened is that the split is between its traditional establishment, its secular, coastal, and generally the economic establishment that have benefited incredibly from the tech boom in the country, that benefit incredibly from the arms industry. They come out of the best units of the military. But at the same time, they live in a part of the country that is completely removed from Israel's occupation and its treatment of Palestinians. They are these bubbles that allow them to, that allow Israelis in them to not really deal with the greater reality of the country. And they're bristling against a government that is backed by hardline nationalist settlers that have been riding roughshod in the West Bank, and an incredibly violent campaign of designed at expansion, and have increasingly held the political power in the country over the last years. And the crisis that it's reached is that Netanyahu, who's the prime minister embattled in corruption, has really now fallen on the settler movement to prop up his political coalition in the split that represents the rightward shift to the country, even if his judicial reforms have not been particularly popular. And what it means is, and what that represents is, the sort of settler nationalist, they're not, the movement in the country that's the most powerful political movement in Israel, effectively deciding that their rule in the West Bank and their and the state support, the unquestioned state support for their expansion is not really enough. What they want to do is, or at least according to the protesters, they feel that these people now want to rule over Tel Aviv. They want to impose their religious nationalist values in the state and shape it in a way that doesn't allow that sort of separation where they live in their world connected, between Jerusalem and the settlements, and the coast lives in its own world. And so for the first time, a political establishment that has lost political power over the last, really over the last 15, 16 years, is now feeling that they're going to lose the entire country. And it's led to this massive political paralysis where those that are at the center of the country's economy and its ruling class question whether the country will be the kind of country that creates the world that they want to live in. All of this is absent from the Palestinians.
Okay, well, let's build on a few points. I wanted to underline one thing that you mentioned, just a factual point that is important. The fact that there is no constitution in the Israeli political context. Just underlining that. But going towards the... there's historical reasons for that, and I encourage people to look that up. But going to some of the points that you mentioned, you know, I think about the horizon model of settler colonialism, right? And, you know, the U.S. context historically. And, you know, the power was, you know, for so long at the beginning in these coastal cities in the East Coast of the United States in the launching of this colonial expedition. And those cities benefited deeply from the fact that more and more territory was being quote-unquote conquered by settlers who were expanding west in terms of resources, in terms of land. But there were bubbles also in that context in the eastern seaboard, New York City, Boston, Philadelphia, etc. I think this is a lot of the points that you raised, I think, are not coming through in a lot of the reporting, right? The ways that this is conveyed often is, okay, liberal, progressive communities and networks of people in Tel Aviv are protesting this judicial reform against right-wing nationalists. And there's an assumption that this means people who are on the streets in Tel Aviv are, you know, supportive of human rights that would extend to the Palestinians. This isn't necessarily the case. You talked about how people sort of didn't want their reality to be disrupted. Is there any sort of parallel in terms of thinking about the West Bank settlements as sort of a frontier that benefits these sort of metropole coastal elite bubbles, financial, political infrastructure of power, with, you know, the U.S. historical situation? And just for people to understand a bit more that dynamic, because I don't think people who are trying to follow these protests get it.
Well, I think that, firstly, the settlements are, you know, it's not a fringe project of Israeli nationalists. It's central to the state. You have almost 750,000 settlers that are living across the Green Lines, around 750,000 if you're from East Jerusalem and the West Bank. They have large towns like Ariel and Maliad Amim that are, have, for example, in Ariel, have a certified university. The government provides all kinds of incentives for people to live in the settlements, everything from childcare to other kinds of services, alongside cheaper rent, and alongside they'll have cheaper rent. Added social benefits to entice them to live in the West Bank. And this has been a longstanding state project since 67. I mean, you know, I talked to Gonen Ben Itzak in the piece, who's he's known as one of Israel's most successful handlers of Palestinian collaborators. He handled the Green Prince, major son of a leader in Hamas that Israel turned. He had been involved in the arrest of Marwan Barghouti, the leader of the Fatah leader during the Second Intifada, and you know, he talked about how, like, in even in the after 67, that the old Ashkenazi liberal establishment loved the settlers. They were these great religious guys that would pray for them and kind of follow through with the state project out in the occupied territories. And so there is a complete integration, and the thing that Netanyahu has been most successful at in his reign is that the transformation of a very segregated country, designed to be segregated to shut Palestinians out, made into a permanent solution. And so it's not only the bubbles of Tel Aviv, but it's also the settlements that are linked together on segregated roads that connect to Israel's territory, that created this entire society where Jewish Israelis can live in their own world on both sides of the Green Line, fully connected to each other, that have really sort of driven the current crisis. And the reason I wrote the story was because no one really looked at what that meant for Palestinians either. People assume, as you point out, that it's a liberal protest and a defense of a Supreme Court that upholds rights. Well, the Supreme Court and Supreme Court justices told me this have been a central institution in greenlighting Israel's government policy, whether it's home demolitions in the West Bank, settlement expansion. And when it's exercised constraints, it's been constraints in line with what our government policy, when the government had a policy of not settling on private Palestinian land in the West Bank, but only state-controlled land, they would greenlight evacuations. They greenlighted the evacuation of the Gaza settlement because that was the policy of the government of the day. And so you have a consensus on shutting out the Palestinians from the process, and really from any control or influence in their own reality and determination over their own lives. And there is effectively a consensus on that on both sides of the divide in Israeli society. The question is what, you know, for those Israelis protesting, it's about maintaining the status quo. And maintaining that those sort of spheres of their own rights, and for the government, it's which again seems to defy logic because Netanyahu spent so long building this up, but they're effectively bursting these bubbles in a race to expand and further control their own. And that crisis will have profound impacts on Palestinians. But it's not like there's a side that's actually advocating for them.
Thanks for sharing that, Jesse. Just maybe we could have a brief point on this, because I want to get into a few other things. Can you just briefly talk about why understanding that as something that is maybe a cultural divide but not an inherent policy divide in terms of like the settler colonial project? You did talk about that, but just maybe break that down in a more general, specific way from your vantage point.
Yeah, the settlers and the religious right and the religious nationalist right in the country, they have fundamentally a different outlook on what Israel should be as far as they're concerned. They are looking to build a religiously influenced ethno-nationalist state. And what what those who are protesting are trying to preserve is this sort of contradictory balance between a Jewish national state and the democratic rights that that they currently have. And I don't mean to underplay what the concerns are in the streets. What you have is a reality where Israelis are very concerned about losing certain fundamental rights being subject to religious nationalist values. But they're doing it in a context where they're saying, hey, we're going to lose these rights. This is why we have to protect the court. And the court does protect Jewish-Israeli rights in ways that it doesn't for Palestinians, even Palestinian-Israelis, as we saw with the nation-state law several years before that the court approved of. But these changes will also have, because of the nature of the politics, fundamental impacts on Palestinians. And what the Israelis are fundamentally not dealing with or not discussing is, while they say we're worried about losing these rights and we're not going to be a democracy, they're not talking about the people who don't have any rights. You know, there's 5 million Palestinians that live under military rule and siege. There are Palestinian Israelis that live as second-class citizens, none of which see anything of themselves in these protests. Palestinians in the West Bank have continued to run a rebellion and expand a rebellion out of complete frustration for the last year, basically saying... It's about, yeah, we're another generation that have been denied any chance of a future or any rights.
Yeah, so let's get into that as the last point of discussion in this conversation, Jesse. But you mentioned the nation state law briefly. People don't know what that is. Just please briefly explain that.
The government passed what's called a basic law, a law that carries constitutional weight, that defined Israel as solely the nation-state of the Jewish people and denied Palestinians any national rights within the state. And it was seen as a codifying of relegation of them to second-class status and the denial of central rights that could provide equal status for them in the country. And Palestinian Israelis are citizens, and they have never had a full equal status within Israel. They've always faced all kinds of forms of systemic discrimination, underfunding. But what they've noticed under Netanyahu governments is a process of codifying the denial of their rights. And the nation-state law was seen as the central plank of that, and the Supreme Court approved it. And it's no surprise, as a result, that Palestinians in Israel are not participating in these protests. They've said, they'll often say, where was Israel when our rights were, where were these Israelis when our rights were being taken away? But they will ultimately also say, when these reforms go through, we're going to be the first target. They're going to come for our voting rights next.
So on this point of how the government of Netanyahu affects Palestinians, both Palestinians who hold Israeli passports, citizenship, but also Palestinians living under occupation in the West Bank, Gaza. One thing that was striking was that the protests in Tel Aviv against judicial reform in the Israeli context, when the invasion of Jenin happened recently, this summer, there was no connection made. There was no protesting for the rights of Palestinians. So talk about that, and also talk about the importance of keeping focus of the brutality of the occupation in the West Bank.
It's important to point out there is an anti-occupation bloc in the protests. There is a small Israeli left that is trying to actually make the connection between Israelis fearing losing their rights and the Palestinians that don't have them. And their argument is you can't actually have a real democracy without equal rights for all. And that starts with ending military rule over Palestinians in the occupied territories. And they're very clear on that, but they're a very small minority. We're talking hundreds in a sea of tens of thousands. Now, for the daily reality of Palestinians is that and this is the other fear with the nation state, or with not the nation state law, excuse me, with the judicial reform, is that the government is not only paving the way for further control over Jewish Israelis and denying the rights of further denying the rights of Palestinian Israelis, but a full throttled expansion across the West Bank that would involve annexations, dispossession of Palestinians in larger numbers, and a solidification of Israeli or a declaration of Israeli sovereign control over the West Bank while the siege of Gaza continues to hold. And what they've said clearly, when I spoke with Rothman, Simcha Rothman, the architect of the judicial reform, he was very clear in trying to not discuss the kinds of rights that Palestinians in the West Bank would have under Israeli sovereignty. He was very clear in also trying to argue that the Supreme Court changes weren't necessary to expand Israeli annexation. But he really didn't want to talk about the kind of situation that Palestinians would live under when that happens. And that's And that is the other side of what is going on in the shift in Israel. That there, you have a government in power and a coalition that is so hardline that they want to remove any kind of procedural checks that could happen because they understand that they have to maximize the time that they have, and so they're trying to create a situation where legally they can run as roughshod as the settlers that expand a settlement, you know, that create a hilltop outpost overnight. And they're basically trying to create that, turn that into a legal reality and a reality of functioning for the state. And that impact on Palestinians is a situation where they're basically looking at anywhere between expulsion and further dispossession and re-ghettoization, being locked into these small little enclaves around the West Bank, something Amira Haas, the Israeli journalist, loves to call, regularly calls Bantustans in reference to the South African system. And this is the Israeli solution. And so they've been fighting this. And they, it was a rebellion that started under not a Netanyahu government, one of the few, it was under Bennett previously, but because the conditions of occupation and the system and process of the segregated solution that Netanyahu really solidified since he started to solidify since he became to power, since he came to power, has become the Israeli political consensus. And so it started under him, and then what happened was his government came to power, he came back to power with a new hardline coalition, and they've accelerated the kind of crackdown that has been experienced across the West Bank, as we saw in Jenin.
That was a conversation with Jesse Rosenfeld, who is a journalist based in Ramallah, Palestine. And as you heard, we discussed the protest movement in Israel against judicial reform, and a key point, which is that the issue of the Israeli government's occupation of Palestine, including the West Bank and the continued besiegement of the Gaza Strip, which right now is in the international spotlight given the massive Israeli military assault on this besieged enclave of Palestinian people. The fact that this aspect is not a focus of the Israeli protest movement against the government of Benjamin Netanyahu, I think it's important to think about and consider these political layers today at this critical moment. So thank you to Jesse for being on the program. Free City Radio is hosted and produced by me, Stefan Christoff, and we air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM at 11 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CJLO 1690 a.m. also in Geoghegan, Montreal on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg at 10:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesdays, on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, British Columbia on Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and Saturdays at 7 a.m. On Met Radio, 1280 a.m. in Toronto at 5:30 a.m. on Fridays. And on CKCU, 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. You can find our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We are also a podcast, which you can look up and find on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Just search Free City Radio. Please tell a friend about the program, and I'll speak to you next week.
Radio.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.